everybody, and welcome back to Clear Voice. This week, I've been speaking to three amazing, trailblazing women who are aiming for two world records, both of them waterborne. That's right, I've been speaking to Atlantic Antics. Flo, Hannah and Georgie are aiming to be the youngest and fastest female trio to row the Atlantic Ocean unsupported in 2020. It really is an amazing feat. So let's listen to how they're going to do it and how they're using their voices for change. Hello, ladies. How are you feeling this evening? We're going to have to go one at a time because we've only got two mics. But we'll start with Flo. If you could all introduce yourselves and tell us who you are.
Yeah. So, hi, my name's Flo Ward. I am a data analyst in a marketing agency called Digitas. And I'm a future ocean rower.
Very exciting. And next we have...
Hello, I'm Hannah Walton. I am a geography teacher. Yay for the geography. Also about to be a future ocean rower, which I guess is why we're here, really.
Yeah. And last but not least...
Hello, I'm Georgie Leach, a future ocean rower as well, and soon... to get a job in advertising.
Keeping the faith.
Just finished uni, so it should be round the corner.
Excellent. So you've all quite got diverse backgrounds. How did you meet? And to fill in the listeners, you're about to all embark on something that is, I think, moderately crazy, but very admirable and very exciting and just amazing. So who would like to fill us in on what you're about to do?
So, December 2020, mm-hmm. So what's that? Only about 14 months away, which is a little bit scary. We are, we'll be leaving La Gomera in the Canary Islands in an ocean rowing boat. And hopefully 50 days later, no more, we will make our way to Antigua. So essentially we're rowing 3,000 miles across the Atlantic. We're doing it as a three, so we hope to be the youngest and the fastest female trio to have done this. And that all stemmed out of, really, we both, myself and Flo, met at uni and we rode together at uni, and we had a couple of friends that had done this race. It's called the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, both of whom were boys, and we just, it was always something that we thought, that's really, really cool, and maybe we'd do it at some point in our lives, but that point isn't right now. And that was about 4 years ago, and then it came up in a conversation about last year, as a four, as a different sort of arrangement to what we are now, and both myself and Flo were part of that conversation. The other two decided they didn't want to do it, but we were still really, really keen, and for various reasons we decided we wanted to do it as a three. We went through a bit of a process trying to find our third person. At this point we didn't know Georgie, and we got to the point where we're like, well, we've kind of asked everybody that we know that we think we'd be able to spend 50 days on an ocean with. We now need to like expand our horizons and think about somebody else. So we talked to the guys at Rannoch who are making our boat. We said, do you know anyone that might want to row an ocean and might want to be a team of three? They put us in contact with Georgie and we FaceTimed, and then we were like, yeah, let's pay €1,000 each, even though we've never met. So we entered the race, and then we met her like a few weeks later and we're like, oh yeah, she's all right. We'll keep her. So that's how we're the three we are today.
That's great. Quite a gamble then.
Just a little bit.
But it's paid off?
Definitely.
Yeah. That's great. And Flo, can you tell us a little bit about, so you're going to be in a boat. What kind of boat is it? How does it work? Are you going to be rowing all the time? Do you sleep? Do you eat?
Yeah.
Most importantly, how do we?
All the essentials. So the boat, I think what people envisage when we tell them that we're going to be rowing an ocean, I think they immediately think of a normal river rowing boat. Luckily, the boat is slightly larger than that. I think it's, I'd say it's, there's two cabins at either end. And I always describe the cabins as having enough space for two adults to be sleeping like sardines.
Okay.
So
cozy.
It's very cozy. The plan is to row 2 hours on, 2 hours off. Or that's traditionally what people do. We, because we're in a three, it adds a sort of added complexity to the situation. So we'll try different shift patterns, whether it's rowing 3 hours on, 3 hours off, and rotating through who's rowing in the sort of waterfall effect. This means that because you're rowing in these shifts 24/7, you only ever sleep for maybe an hour, hour and a half at a time.
Wow.
So tiredness and fatigue is like a huge part of this challenge. I think more than anything, this is a mental challenge and a physical challenge. I think probably 90% of it is mental. Other
sort and it
of-
is mental.
Rightly so. It is for insane. And how do you, let me think what else. So going to the loo, so we have a bucket, the privacy of a bucket to go to the loo.
And food, do you have food. To take all your food with you?
So yeah, so you have to take, we will be unassisted, unsupported. So we'll have everything with us, everything that we need. We'll take enough food and an extra in case we're at sea for a little bit longer than anticipated. So that's like usually like dehydrated ration packs, which we'll use a jet boil to heat up some water and turn it into a delicious meal.
Cordon bleu.
Yeah, exactly.
And what about drinking water?
Drinking water, so you'll have a water maker that can turn seawater into drinking water. We'll be going on a training course to learn how to use that and how to fix it, because often there are problems with equipment on board. So I think there's, in all seriousness, like you need to know your boat inside out so that you can fix anything, whether it's the water maker or the auto helm, which does your steering, or anything else on the boat, you want to be able to fix it whilst at sea.
Wow. So you are rowers, chefs, mechanics, everything.
Exactly.
Wow.
Women doing it all.
And of course, we are here to talk about voices. So does anyone have a really good story about when they felt like they really didn't have a voice?
So funnily enough, as we are rowing nation whatever, at my rowing club at uni, all the boys had a bit of a sort of assumed confidence within the club, because male rowing is more of a, well, I don't know, this, like, people think, oh, it's more impressive because they're faster and stronger. And so a lot of the time, like, when us girls were like, oh, let's do this, a lot of the boys would be like, oh no, the girls aren't training enough. It's like, well, they never saw our training, or like we'd have an idea and they sort of wouldn't listen to us as much because I think they thought that they knew better, and so they thought we were just these like nagging girls. So it was a bit, that's a bit of a time where it's like not having a voice.
Yeah, and also yeah. I think women voicing concerns is always labeled, not always, yeah, but being labeled as like nagging.
Yeah,
don't be such a nag. It's not, no, yeah, I'm voicing a concern, you need to listen to it. Just because you don't like what I'm saying,
yeah,
does not mean that I'm nagging you. Also, if I'm asking you something to do something constantly, then you probably just need to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Or they would be like, oh, now there's like beef between the male and females. It's like, no, we just want to like do the same things, we just want everyone to get on. And then I feel like that's often misinterpreted as like you're saying, like nagging and stuff.
And so what, how would you combat that?
Well, I suppose just like keep persisting, and I suppose even if you are being annoying, then hopefully something will get through. Or like if you get through to at least one of them, talk to them like that.
The enemies.
The enemies. No, they're like, I'm not sure really. I think it's just like trying to approach it in different ways as well. Because I think eventually we did get there and people sort of get on in the end, but...
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it is difficult, isn't it? Especially when there's like a mob mentality and you feel like you're being labelled as something and you're like, oh, well, I may as well give up now, especially because I don't want to be socially labelled as this. But then there's also the angst of like, but no, we do want this to happen. Yeah. So yeah, carrying on, just staying strong. And I think divide and conquer, as you say, is always so good. There will, within a group, there will be someone that you can talk to and they will hopefully listen and bit by bit break them down. Yeah,
I think part of it as well is so much, and I mean, it is the thing, isn't it? It's confidence. And a bit like when you're talking about asking for a pay rise or trying to get corporate sponsorship, it's about realizing, you know, if I don't at least try, or if I don't at least say this, then of course nothing's going to happen.
Absolutely.
And I'm never going to be heard, or no, you know, nothing's going to be done about this. But, and it's so easy to say, you know, if we're looking for corporate sponsorship, there are 30 other teams in the same race that we're doing, there are 30 other people working just as hard and who will row just as brilliantly and have just as amazing time as we will. But why should that stop us from saying, we still need corporate sponsorship, we still need to raise this money in order to do it, like we're still going to be just as great as anybody else? And I think it's the same, you know, whether it's in the workplace or social life or anything, it's about saying, my thoughts and feelings are just as valid as anyone else's. And it's having that confidence to step out and say, this is what I'm feeling, or this is what I'm thinking. And maybe bring either saying, this is a problem, I'm bringing a solution, or just saying, this is how I'm feeling. And I just need somebody there to sort of help me along with that.
Definitely. I think it's so true, because if you don't say how you feel, you don't raise a problem, then it will never, ever be sorted out. And you just carry on being miserable, or the problem will persist, and that's terrifying. And what about a time when you really found that you had a voice?
I find it every day in every single lesson I teach. Be quiet.
And Flo, what about you? When did you find your voice?
So it's an interesting question, because I've been thinking about this for a while now, and I feel like I'm quite a dominant person. I'm very confident. I'm always very outspoken. And when I think back over my childhood, I definitely wasn't always like that. And I actually think I was quite shy for a long time. But despite being shy, I was still very assertive. Like, I still knew what I wanted. I just probably didn't speak up in social situations as much. And I'd say that I think there was a defining moment in my teens. So when I was 15 and when my mum had cancer, and I think my whole world changed. I think my whole outlook on the world changed. The way I saw people, I reevaluated who my friends were, the people around me, what I wanted. I think there was like such a change in my character that up from then on, I feel like I probably cared less what people thought. And as a result, I was a lot more outspoken. I think I became a lot more confident in situations and sort of standing up for myself, or going for opportunities that I wanted. And then that was only became more reinforced as I think as I went to university and I found things that I was really passionate about. So say like rowing was definitely one of them. And I had probably more platforms to speak up, whether it's like through my education, like through my courses at university, or like extracurricular activities. But it was just interesting that looking back, reflecting on the past sort of 15 years, to notice there was definitely a kind of defining moment.
Yeah, it's amazing. And yeah, it's interesting how our life experiences do shape us, and how for you that just life defining experience was made you reevaluate everything and then not care as much.
Yeah.
And I think it's difficult, because so often, like, I definitely in my life, I'm like, oh, but what will people think? And I have to give myself such a talking to all the time. Like, it doesn't matter. You've just got to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that is applicable to actually so much of like doing things, saying things, just really doing what is right for you.
Exactly. And I think that, I don't know, when something really awful happens to you in life, you just realize how insignificant the little things are, and all the sort of like pettiness that life can bring. You just think you have one life, you need to live it, as kind of cheesy as it can sound.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, I guess, going into sick form, I guess my friend Svenja, who was a German student who came to study in England for a year, and I think her outlook on life is brilliant. I think she embodies just doing whatever she wants, because why not? She always asks. If you don't ask, you don't get. And I think I learned a lot from her, because I always sort of played by the rules. And I think from because I shared a room with her at school, at boarding school, I just picked up on her attitude to life and just how she was so, I don't know, confident, I guess, and would just speak up in any situation. She didn't care. She still does not care what anyone thinks. And I think that's brilliant.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, I wish I was more like that, I have to say. I'm going to have to channel my inner Svenja. And ladies, what about your general relationships with your voices? How do you feel about your voices? Do you like the way they sound? How do you feel?
Oh, I wish I was more like Adele, like with my singing voice. I think it's always what just the sound. It's always one of those things, you know, when you're younger and then you listen to it back on a video or something, you're like, oh my gosh, that's awful. And then I think you just get to a stage, and it's a bit like photographs as well. You're just kind of like, and I always remember this one thing our friend said about photos, and I think it applies to voices as well. Kate was just like, you can't deny it's your face. So, you know, it's kind of the same thing when you listen to yourself back. You're like, God, that's me. Can't deny it. So, yeah, gets you to a lot of places. I think I quite like my voice. Don't really have anything against it.
I find a bit with my voice, like, rather than what it sounds like, the things I say sometimes, I think in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm so I'm cleverer than I make out. And then I start talking and I get so excited about things sometimes that I'm just like, la la la. And then, so I find sometimes I wish my voice could be a bit more like it is in my head, like better thought at my inner voice.
Yeah.
Because I was having a sort of discussion with this man at work about the pay gap, because he didn't believe it was a thing. He was like, it doesn't exist. Great. And then, but then we all know it's a thing. But then I was just coming out with like rubbish, like, yeah, but it is. And so I wish I could, well, I think it will probably come when I get older. I mean, I'm 22, pretty old. But I think, so I think I like what the voice in my head, but I wish I could get it out of my mouth, what I'm trying to say a lot of the time. And then I'd sound more like powerful, which is the goal.
The whole issue of being articulate is so hard. And like Caroline Criado Perez has written an amazing book about the data on why the world is designed for men. And I definitely find that having data and like really knowing what I'm talking about really helps. But then still, you do just get flummoxed. Yeah. It just
happens.
Think
there's ever going to be a time in life when you leave every conversation being like, yeah, smash that. Yeah, so everything I wanted to say in the way I wanted to say it. Like, I still think every time you walk away from something, you're like, oh, I could have just said that, or I could have said that, or I could have got that extra point in, regardless of whatever you're doing. I just don't think you'll ever be like, that was really good from me, top marks.
Yeah.
But maybe we need to be more like that and just have a bit of belief in ourselves. It doesn't matter if you only get 90% of it solid all the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's that 90% that really counts. Yeah. Don't think about the 10. Amazing. And who is someone, do you have anyone that you really admire for speaking out? Is there anyone in your lives that's done that? Flo?
In our lives, or can maybe
just generally
public,
anyone, yeah.
I'd say Jameela Jamil.
Oh yeah.
I love her. I think she's fantastic. I mean, I've kind of been a fan ever since she was on T4 back in the day. But I think that what she's doing at the moment is incredible, because I don't think there's any celebrity or public figure that has used their platform, their social media platform, to the same extent that she has to speak about a single cause. So obviously at the moment she has set up this movement, I Weigh, which is all about body positivity. I think it is incredible what they've achieved in such a short amount of time. I think in 6 months they've organically gained about 1 million followers. And she's now just got it passed through with Facebook and Instagram. They're no longer going to serve ads about kind of detox teas and plastic surgery and things like that to anyone under the age of 18. And that's like an incredible feat to have achieved. I think it's such an important cause of what she's speaking out about, because body positivity is something that affects so many people our age, probably the majority of people our age. I know that having lived with three women who have suffered from anorexia and bulimia at university, I have witnessed it firsthand, the impact that these eating disorders can have, and then the residual effects that they have on those around you. And I just think it's such a fantastic thing that she has done in such a public sphere, which normally in the circles that she's in, is a sort of taboo topic to be talking about. And that's really wonderful.
Yeah.
And actually, she's a perfect example of someone who is very good at articulating herself. She is incredibly well-spoken. I think if you watch any of her speeches, there was one in particular that did the rounds on the internet a few months ago, but she knows how to articulate her point well, which I need to learn from.
She's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, that was a very articulate answer, Flo.
Thank you.
Hannah, Georgie?
I mean, my answer, I think the one, I don't know if this is the same question, but my answer, because I was trying to think of women who inspire me and who I think, there's many of them, But I think it's really difficult with something like this and doing a challenge like this to not say it's the two women sat next to me right now.
Mm. Oh, chills, all the feels.
But it's true, you know, you can't. Oh, did you get a bit emotional or are you just a bit hot?
Just quite red.
You know, if you're setting out to go and cross an ocean, first of all, but also then, you know, try and just get to the start line in terms of funding and try and speaking about the issues, you know, the charities that and the causes that we're supporting, it would be a really lonely journey to be doing it completely on your own. And I mean that in terms of people do it solo rowing, but having the team around them that gets them there. And obviously for us, that team of people is us three on the ocean and also off it. We've got a lot of other people supporting us, which is fantastic. But I think, you know, Flo's endless planning and very in-depth research, which has got us so far, and sort of Georgie's endless positivity. I think without that, you know, they really are a solid team. Atlantic Antics, we're very, very proud to be part of this team, and I'm going to be very proud to be rowing next to these two women.
I'd like to just add to that how amazing Hannah is as well. Oh, just because I just knew from the start that there is no one else who I already knew at the time who'd be able to do a challenge like this, who'd be able to take it on. And I thought one of the nicest things she said was that at the start, when we were thinking about taking on such a challenge, she just said she had faith that as long as we get to the start line, she knows we'll get to the end. And I thought it was like really nice that you know we can do it. And that was brilliant.
Oh, guys, it is absolutely incredible. I think it's so cool that three women are doing this. And I know that, you know, women have done it in the past, but, you know, so for the listeners at home, Flo and I went to school together, and they're seeing one of my friends do this and now meeting you as well, Hannah and Georgie. I feel incredibly humbled, but it's insane also, yeah. Not to make you scared, but it is insane. I could not imagine doing it. And the fact that you are taking on this huge challenge for in aid of these two amazing charities is so cool. And you're trying to break records and you're doing it as women. It's just really, really cool.
Yeah, I think on your point there, one of the big reasons why we want to do it as well, well, for Hannah and I, is that we already knew a few people have done it, but they're all men.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important. Like, I would love to be the first women to do it from our boat club, from University of Bristol Boat Club, to show that we can do it too. I don't see why we can't. I think that's one of the really amazing things with this challenge, is you look at previous competitors and who has done it. There are, I think one of the most inspiring crews was probably four women who did it in 2015, I think, who are the four Yorkshire mums.
Wow.
Who are just very normal women who had never rowed before, who just decided to take on this huge challenge in their 50s or something. And it just shows that if you put your mind to it, you can do it. Because I think what's interesting is a lot of people say to me all the time, oh, it's such an amazing challenge, I can never do it. Mm. And I always think, to be honest, I don't know I can do it if I can do it yet. I've not done it. I don't know until we've actually got to the finish line, but we might as well try, because what else is there? I don't know. I just think that I don't want to be sat at a desk for the rest of my life. I want to experience new things. See, I thrive off different experiences and pushing myself to the limits. And what better way to do that than sitting on a boat for 50 days? Yeah. Maybe 40 if the weather's good to us.
I think it's true. There are other females that have done this before, and some incredible crews. And you said about the Yorkshire Mums, and then the Row Like a Girl, who did that in 2015. Thank you very much. See, I told you she was a good
team, guys. Good team.
But we followed their journey, and also people like Kiko Matthews, who did it solo. And there's a team of four at the moment called Girls Who Dare, who are doing the Pacific Ocean in May this year. So, and it's been really nice to be. We've been in contact with them, but watching their journey as well on Instagram, and just seeing, you know, four girls that are doing a very similar challenge, not the same, but crossing an ocean and just seeing the ways in which they're doing it. They're also doing it for women in sport. So it's been really fantastic to watch their journey as well.
It's amazing that there's such a community and support there.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose it comes back to everything we say about sport and being part of it and part of that community. And one thing that myself and Flo went out in December to La Gomera, and all three of us are going out this year to the start line. And we went out last December, again, having not found Georgie yet, knowing that we were sort of one person down. But we thought, we'll just go out. A friend had said, just go out, have a look, see what it's like. You'll see all the crews out there, all the boats getting ready. And we kind of both got there. And it was, we did one night in La Gomera, and you have to get the 4-hour flight to Tenerife and then an hour's ferry to La Gomera. We had what, like less than 24 hours on the island. I'd been ill off work like the previous week. And I just remember getting there and being like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired. But then we both got there, and we both just turned to each other and we're like, gosh, it just feels so good to be part of something again, you know? And that is, it's just being part of that community and part of people wanting to achieve the same thing and being so like excited about it. And so, you know, because this is a hard thing to do, it is. And I think at the moment, trying to get sponsorship and just trying to make that dream a reality is very difficult, just as much as the row is. But knowing that there's other people around you that sort of have the same destination, figuratively and literally,
yeah,
and wanting to do it, it's just, that's inspiring in and of itself. And it's just, it comes back to that whole thing about being involved in a sport or being involved in something that is bigger than sort of you are, and just, oh, it just, it's very exciting.
It's amazing. And how have you found it as women? Is there a good attitude, or people are like, oh, women? Or yeah, women?
Yeah, no, I think that it, the whole community is very supportive of anyone, to be honest, taking on this challenge regardless of gender, which is why it's such an incredible thing to get involved with. We've already received like tremendous support from Rannoch, who are the people who build boats down in Burnham on Crouch in Essex. And it was actually really nice because recently we went to talk to one of the guys who works there called Angus, and to get his advice on, and his kind of just all his knowledge and everything on what it's like to row an ocean. And I think it was really great talking to him because he was so excited about us as women taking on this challenge and going for these records. And it's probably bolstered by the fact that, so he has raced the Talisker Challenge, raced twice already. And in one of the years, his sister was in the crew, row like a girl. So he's sort of seen her go through it as well. But I think from everyone we meet, I think everyone's actually been very impressed that we've even signed up to do such a challenge.
100%. I count myself as one of those people.
I don't think we've not had any negativity or people saying, oh, you can't do it. I think people aren't, to be honest, when people meet me, I think they're not surprised that I've gone for something like this. They know I like a challenge and I'm pretty ambitious.
It is interesting though. So I'm obviously a school teacher, secondary school teacher, and they know in terms of the staff, and they know that I'm doing this and that I'm going to have a year out because of it. But in assembly the other day, one of the deputy heads came and said, do you mind if I sort of say that one of our members of staff are doing this? I was like, yeah, of course, it's not a secret. I just hadn't really told any students yet. And so we're in assembly, and it's whole school assembly. So it is about 1,200 students, and they're all girls. And so Nick was saying about the school aims, and one of them about being bold and ambitious, and said, and there's one member of our staff who next year will be rowing across the Atlantic, you know, unsupported, blah, 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 by their own power. And everyone was like, ooh. But he didn't say who, and he was like, and that will be revealed later in the year at some point when I'll do an assembly, unless if anyone's listening to this, surprise. But then, and he was like, and she will be revealed. And everyone was like, and I could hear some kids behind me being like, she, it's a she. And it's just still quite crazy how even in a school that is completely, you know, we really are and very, very good as a school at empowering women and making sure that, you know, that they are, that they have voices as students and as young women, that their initial thought still for some of them went to, it must be a male doing this. And so that was just a really interesting thing to see, because, you know, maybe it's still quite embedded that if someone's doing something that requires a little bit of physical challenge, that maybe it must be a man. So can't wait for that reveal.
Yeah, that'll be a very good assembly. Amazing. Yeah, that is very interesting. Well, you know, that's why, again, it's so important to do this and to speak out and to be the role model that you want to see. So what are you most excited about and what do you feel the most trepidation about?
Probably most excited about getting to the finish line. And just like, I feel like the feeling when you finish is probably going to be the sort of, you're never going to feel anything else like that. It'd be a bit like what I'd imagine it'd be like to win the Olympics, to sort of like, I don't know, because you'd be so relieved it's all over and so happy that you've done it. And also maybe seeing a whale. That'd be cool.
Yes.
Because there's all the sea life there all around you.
And so you're doing this in aid of two charities.
Women in Sport, because I think it's a fantastic charity that is seeking to try and create equality in sport at the moment, because at the moment there's 1.5 million more men participating in sport than women.
Wow.
And that's a gap that we need to close. And all three of us have had our lives impacted by sport. I think it's played a huge role in what we do and who we've become. And at university, we were all rowers. So I think it was really important to choose a charity that was close to us. The other charity that we're going to support is Rhythm, which is a new initiative in the rowing community. It stands for Rowing Together for Healthy Minds. And at the moment, it raises money for Mind Charity. It was set up by some people we know in memory of a fellow rower from our boat club at university who sadly committed suicide a couple of years ago. And I think it's such an important cause, because I think people should be talking about mental health more and more. And so I think we're really proud to be supporting a cause like that.
Absolutely. I think it's amazing, because also you talk about the gender gap in between participation in sports and how sport can help your mental state so much. So that's 1.5 million women that aren't having the mental health support that sport can bring you.
Exactly. And yeah. I think it's always shocking as well, the numbers where, I don't know if I'm off by heart, but the lack of teenagers and younger girls getting involved in sport. And I think that's, you know, you want to get them involved from such a young age, because so that they can see all of those positive benefits, both physical and mental. And I know, like, personally, I feel like without sport, it just keeps you sane. You know, if you're having a bad day, I think there's nothing better than going for a run with a friend, getting on the river and going rowing, or even just kind of having a good session in the gym. It really, really helps.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's definitely the idea, I think, for all of us, in terms of, you know, we've grown up playing sport, regardless of whether we were very good or not. And it's more of that friendship and that community that we've found in that sport that is the most important thing. I think certainly for me, you know, it's great to keep fit and, you know, those endorphins kicking around. But the main thing that I've taken away from my time playing sport, whether that's netball at school or whether that's rowing at university, those people that I played in those teams with or rowed on those teams with are still my closest friends. And they're the people that I go to in times when maybe you need that bit of extra support. And that wouldn't have come from having not played sport. So I think there's a really nice balance there between the two charities in terms of women in sport and then also that mental health side of things.
Absolutely. And of course it costs money to do this, right?
Lot of money.
Yes. Tell me more about how you're going about securing the sponsorship. Georgie's looking terrified that she has the mic at this moment. Flo.
Yes. So the whole challenge obviously is very expensive, because we need to acquire a boat, we need to pay the race fee, get all the equipment, do all the training, all the courses, flight, shipping. There's a lot that goes into it. So the whole thing will cost us probably around £120,000.
Wow. That is a lot of money.
Yeah, it is huge. So we are in the process at the moment of looking for corporate sponsors. These could be, if we're lucky, we'd find one title sponsor who would fund the whole thing and would be able to give full branding to and full coverage and everything. But the likelihood is we'll probably end up with maybe a mixture of sponsors. We hope to get sponsors both who'll give us financial backing, but also some who might just be able to provide sort of goods and services. It is obviously a very difficult thing, because I think nowadays there are so many people doing fantastic challenges, really, really hard physical challenges, whether it's climbing multiple mountains or rowing multiple oceans or whatever. So what we hope makes us stand out is that we are three women taking on this challenge of trying to break two world records.
And so how do you have those kind of difficult conversations of asking for a massive amount of money? How do you feel about that? And how would you offer some advice to people who do that?
So I always think you need reasoning and evidence behind it, because I've done this both whether we're going for the corporate sponsorship now or whether I've done it in my own personal life in the workplace. You need to make sure that you have the backing behind it and to prove the value and why you want that. So in the case of our corporate sponsorship, we're trying to show them, prove to sponsors, okay, this is what you can get in return. These are the things that we can offer, and make sure that there is a fair value exchange. And the same applies in the workplace, where if you are asking for that pay rise, I think that you have to show this is your worth, this is why you deserve it, why you merit it, because you have achieved X, Y, and Z. These are the things that you're contributing to the company. It's not just about yourself, it's about the people around you. So what can you contribute to your colleagues, to the company, the workplace, the culture, all of that? That is a whole like package deal. And the same applies for when we're looking for corporate sponsorship. What can you give to that brand, to their employees, to their following, their fans? There's got to be more than just you.
Absolutely. Good answer. I feel inspired by you guys massively. It is really inspirational. You're taking on such a huge challenge, and I think seeing women do it is really inspirational, that you're doing it also on behalf of women in sport and Rhythm as well. I'm so excited to see everything that happens. I can't wait for all the stories. Will there be Insta updates?
There are Insta updates. If you follow at Atlantic Antics 2020, then we'll be updating that as well throughout the race. Same with the website, which again is atlanticantics2020.com.
Very good. Hey. Okay. Thank you so much, ladies. It was really good to speak to you all. And good luck. Lots of useful facts and feminism there. If you want to follow Atlantic Antics, all the information you need is below in the show notes or on my website. Next week, I'll be speaking to Anna Lapwood, who is an educator, broadcaster, conductor, and organist. She is doing many jobs that are traditionally held by men and are still held by men. She is operating in a man's world, and I talk to her about how she does it and how she asserts authority and gains respect. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe, because it helps other people to find us. See you then.